morning. Welcome to the spiritual gym this morning. How's everyone doing on this sunny day? Oh, you guys are all like super mellow about this, aren't you? Stupid sun and the stupid loveliness outside. I don't know about you guys, but the other day I woke up one of those mornings and I have a song in my head. They call it an earworm, right? And it's like there's one little chunk of a song and it just is on repeat nonstop. I'm going, what in the world is that song? Then I realized it's a song from Adam and Alessandra. I was like, oh. There's something about that line. Did you hear the last line? I rejoice in what is and what's gone. That's a pretty powerful line, isn't it? You know, as we all kind of work on our spiritual journeys, there's a time when you bring things on and there's a time when you let things go. And then there's probably a time when things get let go, whether you want them or not. Anyone ever experienced the, don't put up your hand, but experienced the letting go when, you know, like, oh, geez, I was hoping that one would stick around for a while. But that's what the spiritual gym is about. This is a place where you can take things on, let things go. You can hold on to the same thing as your neighbor has. You can hold on to nothing that your neighbor has. It's a place where we come and we wrestle and we explore, and it's a safe place to go, ah, oh, geez, like I lost everything this week, and that's where I'm at today. So wherever you are in your journey right now, wherever, whatever's going on inside of you, whatever you've taken on, whatever you've lost, it's all good here. That's what this place is built for. So welcome to the spiritual gym. Today, we also, I just want to say thank you. We are, did you know that we're 100% funded by your donations? Every story of impact, every person who's been changed, every relationship that's impacted, every moment in this world where Friend Church has spilled out and touched someone else's life, that's all on you guys. So thank you. It's incredible to be a part of a community that funds itself, supports itself, and is committed to making a difference in this world, making this world a little bit better. So I just want to say thank you today. If you haven't thought about donating through Friend Church, and to me, that preposition is really important, through. Because it goes out from your pocket through Friend Church into the world around you to make it all better. So if you're not a part of that and you want to be, you can go online. Perfect. Friend Church, there's an app. If you don't have the app, I highly recommend it. It'll tell you everything that's going on. So just again, thank you.
All right, good morning, everyone. Let me try that one more time. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Awesome. welcome to our gathering today. My name is Tom, and part of the teaching team occasionally here at Friends Church. It's a real joy to be here today. And I love that the values of Friends Church are, I'm in sync with those. Let me just say it that way. And one of the values is not stating things. It's really a shift in your language, but not stating things as certain and as though if you know something when you can't prove it. And so I think that's a really interesting foundation, if you like. Today's message came out of a conversation. So Adam and myself were playing golf one day a couple of weeks ago. And I said, just carelessly, I said, look, I'm speaking in July at the end, and there's no assigned topics, because most of the time you're kind of given an assignment and then you have to study around the assignment. I don't have one. Got to come up with anything. And so when you can talk about anything, it gets really difficult. Because then you got, because finding what you're going to talk about is half the battle, right? And so Adam said, kind of casually, he says, why don't you talk about how you know what you know? And that kind of the gist of it. Anyway, we had this ongoing kind of conversation over a couple of rounds of golf around this idea of knowledge. Now, probably not the best place for sermon prep in terms of message prep, in terms of being on the golf course. But it was working for us anyway. It was kind of cool. So I want to talk and have a conversation today a little bit around this idea of knowing and knowledge. And why is that important? Let me digress a little bit, though. There was a book recently written that captured for me and the essence of what I do in life. And somebody asked me a while ago, they said, what do you do? And it's difficult to put into an elevator pitch what we do. And I work with First Nations in terms of personal development for that community. And so I said, just kind of off the cuff, I said, well, I'm in the business of creating defining moments. And there was a book written by Chip and Heath Beck a couple of years ago called Defining Moments. And the book opens up with a very interesting event that took place for both of them. They had both, Chip and Heath, but this couple that they were interviewing, and they had started a school in New York, and it was in a tough area of town, and the title of the school was called Yes, which I thought was very cool for a school. Where do you go to school? Yes. And I that's cool if you're a grade school kid. And they were at a pub one night after school, and they had dedicated like a lot of their time and energy, and it was like a personal mission. They were the founders of the school. They were teachers in the school. They were deeply invested in the school. And they were at the pub one night, really tired from everything they'd been doing. And they were watching on the TV the reveal of where student athletes were going to go to college. And so this was like a big roo-haw. So somebody is declaring which university they're going to go to. Because as you know, in sports, in the college arena of sports, recruiting is a big part of what goes on there. And so these young athletes were declaring for a certain school, and they had two or three hats in front of them. They picked up the hat they were going, okay, I'm going to Texas A&M, or I'm going to, you know, UCLA, or wherever it was. And there was big claps for the people that were from that school, and big boos for the people that weren't from that school, obviously. And so they were sitting there watching this reveal, and they said, hey, why don't we do that for our students when they're declaring which school they're going to go to and which college they're going to go to academically? Why don't we make a big deal about academics like they are about athletics? Because as we all know, our world, our culture today is very sports-oriented, right? And the same idea around academics is not really celebrated. And so let's do that. Let's try that. And so they rented out a kind of community hall. And the very first time they did it, they had a couple of hundred people there. And most of the people in that auditorium had never been to college. Their children were the first generation to actually aspire to go to school because of being part of this school. Yes. And at the reveal, they were sharing where they were going to go to in these various colleges, and it was a really big deal. And for a lot of the parents to actually have their child go to college was like a big deal. And this particular event became a defining moment in the school year. And what began to take place, and this will tell you what's happened. They've gone from that little community center where the school was only, you know, 200-300 people. They now hold the event in the Coliseum where they play basketball. Like, there's thousands of people that show up at this event. And there was a little grade 9 girl, and she was watching one of her siblings graduate and declare that they were going to a university. And she goes, that's going to be me in 3 years. She said, that defining moment started me on this academic journey where I was passionate about it. Why? Because that defining moment captured something for me about my life. And I believe that defining moments can be very life-altering for us. And if we were to listen to each person's narrative here, there are defining moments that we've had that have changed the course and the trajectory of our life. And I think the work that I do, and that's why I defined it that way, is we create an experience that become defining moments for people. I was just talking to a young lady from up north, and she said her time with us was a defining moment. She's been sober ever since, and she's quit drinking, and she's got her children back. She said, that was my defining moment. And I believe in those defining moments. Vince and I were sharing in preparation for today. He was saying, we love being here and watching those moments take place for people where you kind of go, oh, guys, see that differently. And it alters the trajectory of my marriage or of my parenting or of my relationships or my spiritual journey. You know, those defining moments that can take place in our lives. So my hope is today that we acknowledge those moments that take place for us, and really what do we do with them, and how do they arrive, and can we actually create them, which I believe you can. When it comes to the idea of knowing, all of us in this room have artificial intelligence as part of us, and we are smarter with what we now use the phrase our smartphones. And we just know stuff that we didn't used to know. We have access to knowledge now that we've never had access to before. I was having a conversation with Michael and somebody else on the other day, and we were talking about a movie and who was in the movie. And we were trying to think of that person's name. You ever had one of these moments? And my buddy said, that's a Google moment. And so, you know, you just go, hey, Google, who was in what movie it was? And boom, comes up, got it. We're smarter with the artificial intelligence that's now integrated into our lives to such an extent that knowledge is no longer an issue for us. We have instant knowledge right there, and we really don't need to remember all the little trivial details. Games like Trivial Pursuit are out of vogue today. Like, why would you play Trivial Pursuit? Just Google it. What, are you just dumb? You don't have a smartphone? Like, come on. And so remembering information is no longer, that sexy in a sense. Like, memorizing, periodic tables. And so this will date me. How many of you remember being in school and you had to do your multiplication tables and memorize them? Do you remember that? Right? And the millennials are looking at us and going, why would you do that? Like, why would you bother remembering that? Because you could just Google it. And you can take your calculator into the exam. I'm going, like, in my day, you were not allowed to do that. So, and you didn't have smartphones. We had dumb phones. Right? Remember dumb phones? Yeah. And so knowledge in our information age. But here's the dark side to that knowledge. The dark side to that knowledge is that because we have access to knowledge that quickly, do we really understand what we know? And has there been a loss of wisdom because we have access to very quick knowledge? In other words, if you go back to, say, 1956, where Benjamin Bloom came up with kind of what we now know as Bloom's taxonomy that was redone in 2012, I think it was, or 2011. And he said, remembering information is the lowest form of, and all the teachers have been using Bloom's to do prep planning and, all that kind of stuff, because you want to go from remembering to understanding to analyzing, right, to end up at the creative edge of it. So you're on that continuance where you're wanting to gain more a depth of understanding. You want to gain that sense that I get it. I understand that. And how do I gain that level of understanding? But the dark side of the information age is the loss of wisdom. And so we're now seeing a shift in our culture. I'll give you an illustration of it. TELUS Spark. Any of you been to TELUS Spark? A couple of you here? If you've got youngsters, you've probably been. It's a great babysitting service. And you take your kids there. Now, the old science center downtown used to be a show and tell. So you go to the science center, you look at an exhibit, and you press a button, and it shows you what it is, and it was a show and tell thing. TELUS Spark is not that. Telespark is about discovery. The average time at an exhibit at the old show and tell was 20 seconds. So you could go through the building and go and see all the different stuff, which was really time intensive for the people that were creating all the exhibits. And you could only go once every while because then you had to change all the exhibits because you knew all that stuff, right? But now the Telespark has got all of these creative things where you can take computers apart and you can look at the inside of them and you can see how they work. And kids, instead of being at 20 seconds, they're now there for, you know, 20 minutes. And that's the intent, because it's about discovery. It's about the ability to learn, this passion, this desire to know and to learn. Now, back in biblical days, there was this very quiet sect that was gaining on a lot of followers, and they were called the Gnostics. And the Gnostics had this idea of secret knowledge. We kind of get it. We have this secret knowing. And you got to be in the club to have the secret knowing. Interestingly enough, when you read through some of the New Testament, one of the books there in Colossians is actually Paul's defense against this idea of secret knowledge. What Paul's basically saying, I'll give you kind of Tom's 2-second kind of reread of it. It's basically, look, this is available to everybody. This knowledge of spirituality, of the gift of God, this is for everybody. It's not just for a secret sect. And he says this great phrase, says, it's Christ in you for everybody. Like, we all get access to that. So it's not just this private little sect. And a couple of weeks ago, I did a message about living in the gap of uncertainty. And the idea that we have this secret knowledge is still around today. And in conversations where people especially in religious context, in trying to be right, have this secret bit that the rest of us don't get. And you got to get that bit so that you get it. And the idea of getting it with that kind of conversion moment. But what happens when you've got it and then you unget it? And what you got, you deconstruct, right? And so I was chatting with Adam before he was coming out to do the music, and he's doing that song, Raveling. And I was saying that there's a raveling and an unraveling that happens all in the same time, same moment. It's really kind of this. There was a great art piece that was done at a community called Icon, and they had a big, tall figure in the middle of the room. I've been trying to convince Vince and Jeff to do this one day, but I think it'd be super cool. But they have this big woman that was sitting at the top of a 12-foot ladder, and this long dress that came down from it was all made of wool, and it was flowing out to the four corners of the room. And there were little pieces, there were pages of the Bible that had been crunched up and thrown all over the place around the room, and you didn't really notice it when you walked in because it was kind of dimly lit. And in the four corners of the room, there were four people that were knitting. And they were using the long dress that was unraveling, and they were raveling at the same time, because from the same word. And this idea that our faith, our journey spiritually, is always unraveling and raveling at the same time. In other words, stuff that we got, we unget, and then we re-get, and we, you know, we're all, y'all get that? You get the pun? You're getting that, I'm getting it all at the same time. And in our understanding and our learning of that, that's an important piece, because for a lot of us, our understanding is at an unconscious level. We have stuff that we believe that oftentimes can control our lives. And let me throw one out for you. I don't know about you, but I hear this thought coming out of a lot of people's brains, and they say this very carelessly, God has a plan for your life. Who's heard that? Come on, who's heard it? Didn't ask if you believe it. Okay, you've heard it. All right. And I love this thought. What if God doesn't have a plan for your life? And people that believe that God does have a plan for your life, it's one of those very uncomfortable moments going, oh, shoot. Because now all of a sudden, it's like I got to take responsibility for my life. I can't just pass it off to God. You know, God, who do you want me to marry? God's going, I don't know. I don't got to marry them. You do. You get stuck with them. Right? And so we're asking God to do something that he wants us to do. Right? I mean, for those of you that have adult children, I have two kids that are, one's 31, the other's 33. They do not call me up and ask the questions they used to ask when they were eight. How many of you know that would be a colossal failure of parenting? It's called failure to launch, right? Because what our goal is as a parent is like, hey, figure it out. You know, Dad, what socks should I wear this morning? You're 33. Right? The idea that this divine thing of, and by the way, it has a real dark side, because then what happens if you've been on God's plan and then you get divorced? Oh. Okay, well, yeah, the plan's gone to you know where. Right? So we have these beliefs that somehow we miss that. And at an unconscious level, it can run out. Here's one for you. You know, what goes around? Yeah, a lot of people do that. You got it coming. Like there's this kind of divine being in the sky that's just kind of balancing the scales. Right? You cheated, you know, you get a traffic ticket. Right? It's like, I think I've shared this here before. There was a group of bank robbers and they were robbing a bank and sirens are going off and they had a minute to get out and they'd robbed the bank, got all the money and they run across the road and the bus came along and killed three of them. And you all sit there going, see, got what they deserved. So we have this idea, you got had it coming. Karma. Right? There was a pastor one time in a context like this, and he says, how many people here believe in the devil? And nobody put their hand up. He said, okay, so tell you what. He says, everybody take out your smartphones and find a picture of someone who you love dearly. So everybody does that. And all these people that don't believe in the devil, he said, okay. He said, I've got a satanic prayer here. I'd like you to bring your loved one up and say this prayer over that loved one. And nobody moved. Because at another level, what we believe bubbles up, just in case. Right? And so there's a lot of stuff that we've got that's going on around what we believe and don't believe and what we understand. A lot of reflections to it. Because the piece around what we believe about our spiritual journey, what we believe about God, there's three components to it. I've shared this here before, so I'll be brief. But there's an objective piece to it, what we know, what we see. There's a subjective piece to it, and there's an affective piece to it. Let me use an illustration. So objectively, I could say to you that my wife is the most beautiful woman in the world. Right? That's my objective view. Okay? I don't care what you think. She is. Because to me, my wife is the measure of beauty. Right? That's the objective piece. Now, I'm not going to put her in a beauty pageant just to prove it. Because that's what they do with all these little tiara kids and I got the cutest kid in the world. No, you don't. Just to you, they're cute. Right? We all think our kids are the most beautiful kids in the world. Well, to you they are because they're the measure of what kids are. Right? But there's also a subjective piece to that. And there's a subjective piece to the beauty of my wife that captures my heart. And I love her. And so the fact that I love my wife allows me, I can't see the love, but the love helps me see her. Right? And so there's this piece of connection that subjectively grabs my heart. So it's not just objective for me. It's also subjective. Now, it better not be subjective for you. See, that's what the Ten Commandments are all about, right? Come in your own car with your own wife and leave with her and your own car. Basically, that's the Ten Commandments, right? And don't lie about it. Right, don't covet and don't, you know. But there's also a third component of this knowledge, and that's the knowledge that says that my relationship with my wife changes me. It affects me. That I am I'm transformed by that. So that knowledge is objective, it's also subjective, but it's also transformative. And I believe that spiritual understanding, as we move through spiritual understanding, it has this ability of being, we shift, if you like, from our faith being kind of like the old science center of show and tell. Right? Like we go to a gathering and it's like, here's the verse, here's what it means, off you go. That's show and tell. And when we do show and tell in faith communities, it's like we think we get it. We think we understand it because it's like, well, we got that. Okay, got that verse. And you can all parrot all the cliches you've heard through the years. So I was watching the Tour de France the other day. And we were up in Invermere at a friend's place. And my buddy is he's a cycling nut. So he loves to cycle. Now, if you asked me, do I know how to cycle? Because a lot of people say, you could ask them, do you know how to ride a bicycle? Just about everybody goes, sure, I know how to ride a bike. So it's kind of like knowing how to drive a car. Do you know how to drive a car? When you say, do you know how to drive? You're not actually saying, do you have the knowledge to drive? You're actually saying, can you drive? You with me? Because you could learn about, you could YouTube it. And so people go, yeah, I know how to ride a bike. I can YouTube it. So I have the knowledge to do it. Have you ever ridden a bike? Well, no. I can't actually balance on a bike because that's two wheels and that looks really dumb. I need four wheels, right? So that you can do that is another level of knowledge. So we're watching the Tour de France and I've got a bike. I've got a mountain bike. I've got a road bike. I love biking. But I'm not an avid biker. If it's raining, I'm not biking. Right? If it's really hard, nah. That's way too hard, right? I prefer downhill than cross country because it's like the lift does the work and then you can have the fun going down, right? That's kind of bike ride. And we're watching the Tour de France, and I love the Tour de France. I watch it every year. And as we're watching it, I'm reminded my buddy Bill went on a tour of the 14 classic climbs in the Tour. And they would do two a day of those. And these are, you know, climbs that take, like, they're long and they're hard. And there's, like, 9%. And then they kick up to 13% in some stuff. There's nothing in Calgary more than 5%, by the way, just to put it in perspective. So it's like they're and he's ridden them all. How many of you know that his understanding of the Tour and what it takes and my understanding are light years apart? Right? I'm just an observer. And when it comes to our spiritual journey, just doing show and tell, being an observer, that doesn't really work. And leaves us feeling flat. And leaves us feeling somewhat empty. That we're just, if you come here and it's just, you know, Vince does a message up here and goes, wow, thanks, that's a show and tell. And I just go, that was nice. Well, it's not about being nice, to be honest. As a matter of fact, it's better if we're up here not trying to be nice. Not like we're trying to piss you off, but, you know, it's not about being nice. It's not about being liked. It's about challenging so that we get into movement. We get into motion about it. As we were preparing for this, Carmen put on we were driving out to Invermere and Carmen put on a podcast that she just listened to that morning. And she knew I was doing this topic. And it was an Oprah podcast with Brene Brown, I think it was. And the title of it, no, it was just on her own, right? I think, yeah, it was Brene Brown. And the title of the talk was, if you know better, you can do better. And I went, wow, that just about sums it all up, what I wanted to say this morning. If you know better, you can do better. Right? So let me end with a personal story. I used to be a pastor of a church here in Calgary. And it was a, faith community. And I thought we were quite successful. I had a big head about it because I started it. So I think I'm all that in a bag of chips, right? And, you know, we had a lot of people on staff and lots of money and all the celebrity focus that comes with that. In the midst of that, I was in a really challenging place. And here was the inner dialogue, the inner beliefs that I had. My inner beliefs were these. God has called me to pastor this church. That was my destiny. That was God's plan for my life. The fact that my marriage is not going well, and I want to say this just as a disclaimer, that my former partner and I did not get along has nothing to do with her. She was not bad. She's a very good lady. But we didn't work. And so we're in this really lonely, sad, kind of pathetic relationship, really. We were very disconnected. We were like roommates. We were not connected in terms of our journey together. And yet I needed to stay in that relationship in order to pastor because I couldn't be divorced and pastor a church in that worldview. And so here's what happened is I felt like the walls were closing in like this. And they were getting smaller and smaller, and I couldn't breathe, and I couldn't breathe, and I couldn't breathe. And these beliefs that were deeply held in my psyche, right? Because since my conversion experience, these beliefs were there, and I couldn't see anything else outside of them. And my world got so small, it got claustrophobic. And I didn't know how to get out. I did not have the courage to say, hey, our relationship is over, and I need to leave. Didn't have the courage to do that. So I had an affair. And when you're a pastor and you have an affair, it doesn't go well. Just saying. And, you know, I've taken responsibility for that, and that's been, my past is complete. Let me just say it that way. What I recognize now, you know, 12 years later, is that coming out of that, a lot of those narratives, and people create their own narratives about who I am. Some people define me by that event. Some people only see me as that and only see me as wrong and can't see anything else. And so they have this narrative that's wrapped up around, you know, me being a cheater and unfaithful and all this kind of stuff. And for a long time, that was my, like, I lived with a lot of shame and a lot of guilt and a lot of remorse and a lot of regret and cried many tears. But those beliefs, they were there, but then they began to fray. And as I began to complete that, and as I began to find that there was life after, began to put the pieces of my life together, I started to recognize that some of those unconscious beliefs that had held me captive. And as soon as you bring them out of unconsciousness to consciousness, we now gain our power back. And so we get to create whatever beliefs we live out of. And rather than God has a plan for your life, and I messed it all up, and now I'm on to plan B, and the rest of my life will be this plan B life, right? That's not part of my narrative anymore. So these are some beliefs that I hold. I'm not suggesting that for everybody, but I hold them. I believe, here's something I believe. I believe I'm not my past. I'm not my past. I'm not defined by my past. Anybody here not made a mistake in your life? Now, sometimes not quite as public or colossal as the one I screwed up on. Fair enough. Maybe yours is a little bit smaller, if you want. But it's still what... And if you're your past, you're held captive to that. I choose not to be, so I'm not my past. Here's another belief I live out of. And this is a complete ripoff of Sung Moon Vae, who's a philosopher. And she says, gravity and grace, which I think is two of the coolest words on the planet. Because gravity holds us here on this planet, and grace is the divine call that we mess up, right? There's this gravity and grace. We live in that space of gravity and grace. My feet are on this ground, and my heart is captured by the divine. My heart is captured by the Creator. right? Here's another belief I have. I believe very, very strongly that love heals. I believe very strongly that love heals. I see it. Every month we go up and we run retreats for First Nations. We just love on them. That's all you do. Say, look, we love you. And you have all the talk about truth and reconciliation, but until you see them. Now, remember there was a beautiful man. His name's Richard. He was a drug and alcohol counselor up at Tacla, First Nation. And he was a very typical First Nation looking man. And he had a kind of one of those bob cuts, and it looked very First Nations. And he had real challenge in terms of his own sense of self, and he had been in residential school, and he had been told he was a waste of space, and he was a dirty Indian. He'd been said all kinds of stuff to him, and he was doing the best he could with what he had. And I remember he was up at the front of the room with me, and standing there. And I asked one of the young ladies. I said, Richard, you see yourself this way. I said, but can I give you some feedback that you haven't had before? And he said, sure. So I forget this. Alicia stood up and I said, Alicia, what do you see? And she said this. She said, Richard, you are everything good about being First Nation. And I had somebody else say, I said, what do you see? I said, I see a leader. I see this passionate man. And you could see as he's standing there, all of his old tapes just begin to fall off. Here's what he did. He went like this. He went down on his knees and he just began to sob. And that for him was a defining moment that transformed his life, because the old tapes left. That old understanding dropped off. I saw him a couple of months ago, and his hair is completely different off his face. He's got his shoulders back. He comes striding up to me. He goes, Tom. I said, what? He said, I got a girlfriend. And he said, she's going to move in. I said, well, aren't you courageous? And it was like, but you could see the transformation that took place. Why? Because those old beliefs, right, they just melted away, because we heal with love. You're not your past. Yeah, you can be rooted in gravity. You can be grounded on this earth, but there's a higher calling. There's more, right? And for all of us today, when we think about our beliefs and the things that keep us trapped and don't release us into the fullness of who we are, once you become conscious of those old tapes, you now have a choice, right? Here's some of you sitting there, yeah, but you don't realize, some, I'm not smart enough. I'm not rich enough. I'm way too fat. I'm too skinny. I'm not strong enough. Like, you know, I've been hurt. I was raped. I was abused. All of those things means that God's plan doesn't... wait a minute. When you become conscious of those things that all say to you that you are not enough, what if you said right now, you defining moment right now, you go, hey, I'm enough. I am not going to be defined by my past. I am going to be defined by what's possible, and I am creating into the future. So now I get busy and finding places to serve, where the very place that we've been wounded, we can bring healing. I never dreamed ...12 years ago that I would stand in a faith community and be able to share my story and be okay with that. Never dreamed that would be true. I thought it was over. But today I get to. I don't feel shame about that. I'm free from it. And I pray that today, as you hear the possibilities for your own life, that you open up and you realize that you could step past your mistakes. I love the picture of Moses. When God called him up the mountain, And that narrative is powerful because he had smashed the Ten Commandments because he was mad. And those Ten Commandments lay shattered all over the ground. And he had to walk past the place of his last failure to get to the place that God was calling him to. I love that picture. And for all of us, it's important that we're able to walk past the failure to get to that next place in the journey, to look at what we are creating and what we're about. Let's all stand together, shall we? I'd like to, we don't often end this way, but I would just like to say a brief prayer if I could. I know for some of you that's not comfortable, but that's okay. We did a meditation earlier, but could we just say a prayer? Let's just say a word of prayer. Creator, thank you for love. Thank you for your call to love and be loved. And we pray that our love would reach to those in our immediate circles and to ever-increasing circles, that we would, as a community, be known as a people of love, that we would love one another and that we would love others. And we thank you for this. As they say in the First Nations, hi, hi. Everybody said, hi, hi. That's got an amen in First Nations. There you go. Go have a great day. God bless you.